This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, and we're coming to you Tuesday, July 27th, 2004, on the eve of the Democratic National Convention and also after the recent release of the 9/11 Commission report. Today, as you know, is a WBAI Fund Drive Day this entire week. WBAI is going to have special coverage of the Democratic National Convention starting at 9:30 after Taking Aim. Today, given what has been happening in the world with the convention and also the 9/11 Commission report, our premium for the WBAI Fund Drive is a two CD set, very special programs, and as you hear them, you will see how, over the course of Taking Aim, we have been prescient about what is taking place. The two shows are 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11. These were Taking Aim programs prepared in September of 2003. And as you listen to them, you can tell that what we said back then, actually what we were saying in 2001, 2002, 2003, and 2004, enable us to see through the charade that is taking place both in the 9/11 Commission and during the Democratic Party National Convention. The foremost theme, if you listen to New York Senator Hillary Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, and if you listen to the message of John Kerry and John Edwards, the presidential and vice presidential candidates for the Democratic Party, the overriding theme is that we are at war and that there is a vast terror network that must be stopped. Russ?
Well, as a matter of fact, the posture of the Democratic Party and of John Kerry is to outflank the Bush presidency from its far right. Kerry calls for the doubling of funds for covert action. Kerry calls for embracing the policy of preemptive war. Kerry calls for the increase of troops by at least 40,000 in Iraq, and he states, as he did in an extended interview in the Wall Street Journal 2 weeks ago, that the great and precipitous danger is that Bush will remove troops from Iraq too quickly and too soon. Kerry states that the troops must remain in Iraq till the end of the decade, and he calls for an expansion of U.S. military undertakings and operations throughout the Middle East, and indeed enlisting the European powers in this enterprise on an escalated scale. His agenda embraces, as he called it, 95% of the Patriot Act, and the 5% which he does not embrace, he criticizes because it doesn't go far enough. We have here, in fact, a Democratic Party and a candidate and a program that is presenting to the American people the necessity to intensify the militarization of our society, the expansion of war overseas, and the inexorable cut in social services, whatever the empty rhetoric to the contrary.
9/11 and the Capitalist State. We put those words together because it is critical to the understanding of 9/11 to understand the workings of the capitalist state and the domination of world resources. Today, 9/11 and the Capitalist State, the Smoking Guns of 9/11, 2 hours that you're going to want to listen to over and over again and to share with your friends, your family, and your colleagues. The telephone number, you're going to be hearing it again and again, so please write it down now, 212-209-2950 for your generous contribution to WBAI of $100 that keeps programs like Taking Aim on each week and all the programs that you appreciate so much on WBAI 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And now our engineer today is Mark, and we thank Mark so much for being here with us. Mark, if you can begin the first CD, 9/11 and the Capitalist State. ¶¶
Rob Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, September 9th, 2003. This war on terrorism is bogus. That is the headline of an article in Saturday's Guardian in Great Britain, written by none other than British MP Michael Meacher from the Greater Manchester area. Michael Meacher, who has been serving as the Minister of the Environment from 1997 until June, when he resigned in protest. What he says is that the catalog of evidence about September 11th does fall into place when it's set against the Project for the New American Century blueprint. From this it seems, Michael Meacher says, that the so-called, quote, war on terrorism is being used largely as bogus cover for achieving wider U.S. strategic geopolitical objectives.
What he calls, Maya, the ideal pretext to use force to secure U.S. global domination. The ideal pretext. Terrorism, the war on terrorism is bogus. The 9/11 attacks are a false flag, an ideal pretext. What? Michael Meacher, who was in fact the deputy leader, the shadow cabinet leader to replace Tony Blair, a longstanding leader of the Labour Party, no minor figure here, a longstanding member of the Blair regime itself, breaking ranks here, and for the first time setting forth in rather particularized outline the elements of the false flag operation of 9/11.
In fact, Michael Meacher, who was first elected in 1970, is one of Labour's longest serving members of Parliament, and he even served in the Wilson and the Callaghan administrations in the 1970s. False flag operation. This is the term that Ralph and I used in our program 1 year ago, 9/11 false flag operation. Today's show, 9/11 and the capitalist state. Ralph?
The Meacher piece talks about a blueprint. We now know that a blueprint for the creation of a global Pax Americana was drawn up for Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Jeb Bush, Louis Libby, rebuilding America's defenses. The document of the Project for the New American Century is cited in great detail. And in this context, the delineation of how the capitalist state requires seizure of resources and engineered 9/11 as an opportunity for this. There is no minimizing the significance of this embrace of the work that has been done by so many. Notwithstanding our own initial broadcast in the days immediately following 9/11, World Trade Center Uncensored History, it is important that in Great Britain, at least, and it's interesting, by the way, I should mention that the Michael Meacher story, which is featured on the front, not the front page, but featured in the Guardian, has been virtually ignored in the United States.
Michael Meacher, as we have done and others, points to the fact that until July 2001, quote, the United States government saw the Taliban regime in Afghanistan as a source of stability in Central Asia that would enable the construction of hydrocarbon pipelines from the oil and gas fields in Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, through Afghanistan and Pakistan to the Indian Ocean. But, he continues, confronted with the Taliban's refusal to accept U.S. conditions, the U.S. representatives told them, either you accept our offer of a carpet of gold or we bury you under a carpet of bombs.
This is the paradigm of how imperialism operates. There is something to be said that is of significance here. There has never been an imperial war that did not proceed under such pretext. And indeed, how imperialism functions is always in relation to the seizure of resources, the capture of markets, the subjugation of peoples who are sought for their cheap labor, while the resources of their respective countries are commandeered. It's the nature of the operation of capitalism on a global scale. It has been true for 100 years, and every nominal administration of the ruling class in the United States has implemented and pursued this agenda without exception. All of the major imperial wars have been contrivances in this regard. We have cited so often the legacy involved here, from blowing up the ship in the Havana Harbor, remember the Maine, to provide the pretext for the launching of war against Spain and the seizure of Cuba and the Philippines, to the sinking of the Lusitania for the pretext for the U.S. to enter World War I and declare itself as the hegemonic imperial power prepared to challenge the prior colonial domains of England and Germany and France and Italy and Holland and Belgium and indeed Japan. Pearl Harbor, indeed, a pretext once again. The signals for the attack on Pearl Harbor known and already in the hands of the United States, the event itself having been precipitated by U.S. actions in the Pacific, the secret history of the Korean War, as I.F. Stone documented it so meticulously, when raids upon raids by covert operations were designed to precipitate a response for the North Koreans, the opportunity and occasion for a major U.S. war, to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, to the Bay of Pigs, to the events of the Gulf War itself. This is the paradigm in a way, this cabal, this 1% of our population that owns 90% of the national wealth, operates its global reach.
As Michael Meacher concludes, quote, "The conclusion of all this analysis," referring to the details of his article, "must surely be that the global war on terrorism has the hallmarks of a political myth propagated to pave the way for a wholly different agenda. The U.S. goal of world hegemony, built around securing by force command over the oil supplies required to drive the whole project." Let us look at what an insider said right after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, September 11, 2001. This is General Gul Hamid. General Gul Hamid, the director of the Pakistani ISI, the intelligence services. Gul Hamid, who worked hand in hand with the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency to build the terror network that was used against the Taliban.
And actually, the ISI, the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency of Pakistan, was in fact the de facto government in Pakistan, along with selected generals in the military. The actual government, run by the Central Intelligence Agency, under its aegis, under its funding, under its control, under its direction, from virtually the inception of the Pakistani state. And Gul Hamid had not just been the head of the ISI, but he was the person who was involved in running the Al-Qaeda, in running the operations in Afghanistan that were the genesis of Al-Qaeda, the Islamic fundamentalist groups of bin Laden and Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, funded by the Central Intelligence Agency, initially with $6 billion, rising to $40 billion, channeled through the ISI. Gul Hamid, the point man in all of this, the destabilization of the Soviet Union, the operation of what Brzezinski called the bear trap in his defining book on the strategy for engulfing the Soviet Union and drawing it into Afghanistan.
His book is called The Grand Chessboard.
And Gul Hamid is interviewed by the editor-at-large of United Press International, Arnold de Borsgrave, the former editor of Newsweek. Indeed, it was immediately in the aftermath of the attack on the World Trade Center that this stunning interview occurred. In an exclusive interview with United Press International, Gul Hamid was asked if there was a plot by anyone involved besides Osama bin Laden, and the response of Gul Hamid was shocking to Deboer's grave and extremely important and explicit. He said it is clear there was a plot by United States Air Force officers against the Pentagon and in conjunction with the Israeli Mossad. The Twin Towers were first attacked at 8:45 a.m., four flights were diverted from their assigned airspace, yet Air Force jets didn't scramble, which is standard procedure, until 10 a.m. This is a small-scale rebellion, a coup. Radars are jammed, transponders fail, there is no IFF, there is no friend or foe identification challenge. This is an inside job. Now, who could have this have been? He said this will be hushed up in the investigation, like the Warren report after the Kennedy assassination. And he indeed specifies how the U.S. Air Force was involved in the stand down. He lays it out in relation as well to the Mossad. A shock, Deboer's grave says to Gul Hamid, but what about bin Laden? Bin Laden. And Gul Hamid comments, from a cave inside a mountain, from a peasant's hovel, how do you think bin Laden would be able to mount so sophisticated an operation? Let us be serious.
Let us be serious, Gul Hamid comments. The Mossad and its American associates are the culprit. We ask, who benefits from the crime? Israel has a short shelf life before it is overwhelmed by demographics. The Palestinian movement cannot be put down. Israel has now handed to the Bush administration, with its acquiescence, the opportunity for which it has been waiting. And we might add, it's not that it's been waiting, it's an opportunity that the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the Carter administration, U.S. administrations have been creating.
Preparing
and creating until this moment. To consolidate America's imperial grip on the Gulf, and to acquire control of the Caspian Basin,
says Gul Hamid,
by extending its military presence in Central Asia.
Gul Hamid states the Mossad and the United States accomplices in its intelligence services are involved here. The United States spends $40 billion a year on 11 intelligence agencies. I know this well. $400 billion in 10 years, and they say they were taken by surprise. Don't believe it. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit, CNN announced that Osama bin Laden had done it. Look, I'm in intelligence. This is a planned piece of disinformation by the real perpetrators. They are creating an instant mindset to put public opinion in a trance which prevents even intelligent people from thinking for themselves. We are talking about the Pentagon being struck, interdicted space. We're talking about the White House and no response, no challenge. This is an inside job, says Gul Hamid.
And Gul Hamid is specific about why this took place at the moment of September 11th, 2001. He states, quote, all summer long we've heard about America's shrinking surplus, that the Pentagon will not have sufficient funds to modernize. Presto, all of a sudden, the Pentagon can get what it wants without any opposition. How very convenient. Even your cherished civil liberties, he says to Deboer's grave, will be abridged with impunity.
To protect the expansion of the hegemony of transnational capitalism.
Let us look now at the reality of the oil story. Missing the oil story was an article by Nina Burleigh, who has written for the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, and New York Magazine, and as a reporter for Time Magazine, was one of the first U.S. journalists to enter Iraq after the first Gulf War. Missing the oil story. She reports about former President Bush, who was an ex-CIA director, and the Washington Carlyle Group, the $12 billion equity firm that employs a motorcade of ranking Republicans such as Frank Carlucci, Jim Baker, and Richard Darman, who were senior Bush Bush Sr.'s colleagues and have opened the doors overseas for the Carlyle Group's access to capitalists. Now, Charles Ritchie of the Washington-based Center for Public Integrity also points the figure to state power in capitalist America and the war drive that they require. Also, look at the financial benefit to George W. Bush, Jim Baker, and the other oil interests. The Oil and Gas Journal had pointed out that Central Asia by the year 2050 could account for 80% of U.S. oil imports. Now, this is the Oil and Gas Journal. As Nina Berlay had been writing, we need, quote, unimpeded access to the stands, by which he means Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Tajikistan, for our oil people, our geologists, our pipelines, if we are to realize the future outlined by Vice President Dick Cheney.
The London Times defense editor Michael Evans published an article on the 20th of September 2001 revealing what he called secret plans for a 10-year war, secret plans to launch this war under the rubric of Operation Noble Eagle, plans long in preparation, plans with a timetable, plans as the article sets forth, waiting for its moment of opportunity to be launched. And indeed, Nayaz Nayak, the former Pakistani foreign secretary, was told by senior American officials in mid-July of 2001 that the military operations for the seizure of Afghanistan, as the BBC reported, were already prepared to proceed no later than the middle of October. The Carnegie Endowment called for a study on Central Asia on the periphery of a new global war. And in this rather important report, they say, and this is preceding 9/11, our target is Central Asia's Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. The assessment reflected the thinking of the major intelligence agencies and their think tanks for over a decade. The Caspian Sea Library boasted reports by Brzezinski and Colin Forsyth the same. The participants in those discussions were Robert Abernathy, the president of America's Standard Development, Daniel Burkos, Cambridge Energy Research Associates, Matthew Burroughs of the Council on Foreign Relations, N.J. Buckler of British Petroleum, Amoco, Ariel Cohen of the Heritage Foundation and the Council on Foreign Relations, Nomi Colton Facts of Global Oil and the Pure Energy Group, and Fred Coote of the Energy Analysis for the Central Intelligence Agencies. Contributors were the International Energy Resources Analysts, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Mobil Corporation, Rand Corporation, Exxon, Bell Atlantic, Goldman Sachs, the James Baker Institute, the Nixon Center, the Journal of Commerce, the First International Oil Corporation, the Petroleum Research Foundation, Chevron Overseas Petroleum, the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the Energy Intelligence Group, the Petroleum Finance Company, and Texaco, a who's who of the ruling class, and this but the first of a series of such conferences preparing for a strategic plan, the seizure of oil in the region, and calculating the benefits of $4 to $5 trillion in short-term profit.
As John J. Maresca, the Vice President of International Relations of UNICAL, stated before the Congressional Committee on Asia and the Pacific on February 12, 1998, he said, 100 years ago, Central Asia was the arena for a great game played by Tsarist Russia, Colonial Britain, and Napoleon's France, and the Persian and Ottoman empires. 100 years later, he specified, the collapse of the Soviet Union has unleashed a great game where the interests of the East India Trading Company have been replaced by those of UNICAL and SoCal. Let's look at the Wall Street Journal, September 5th, 2003, just a few days ago, with a banner headline, Bigger Kazakh Oil Output is Gold. $10 billion investment to spur production in a huge field. Reporting from Paris, Bhushan Bari, the Wall Street Journal reporter, states an international consortium of energy companies plans to increase to $10 billion its initial investment in a giant petroleum project in Kazakhstan in order to produce more oil from the deposit, the largest known oil field outside of the Middle East. It involves Eni, ExxonMobil, Royal Dutch Shell, Total, ConocoPhillips, and Japan's Inpex. And the Kashagan oil field is the largest discovery in four decades.
My
Caspian Sea project will produce 1.2 million barrels a day, second only to Saudi Arabia's gargantuan Ghawar field, the world's largest.
Maya Maresca is very, very specific in setting forth the objectives here. There are tremendous untapped hydrocarbon reserves. To give you an idea of the scale, the proven natural gas reserves are equal to over 236 trillion cubic feet. The region's total oil reserves will exceed 60 billion barrels of oil in the short term. Our estimates are as high as 200 billion barrels. In 1995, the region produced 870,000 barrels. By 2010, we will increase this production by seizure to 4.5 million barrels a day, by an increase of 500%. Our major objective has to be to gain control and secure the region's vast energy resources and to get them to the markets where they are needed. The consortium of 11 foreign oil companies that set forth here, which include Unocal, Amoco, Exxon, and Pennzoil, is almost a replica of the San Remo agreements of April 24, 1920, when the European powers and the United States carved up the Middle East and decided on the percentages of oil they would own and exploit. We contemplate the pipeline south from Central Asia to the Indian Ocean, and we have Afghanistan as the single most significant target of short-term opportunity. This, as Mitra says, is a blueprint. It is an absolutely clear, explicit Mein Kampf. The World Policy Journal carried this study in the spring of 1998 by Ian Bremmer, Oil Politics, America, and the Riches of the Caspian Basin. He is virtually salivating. Quote, "We can barely measure the Caspian wealth. The proven oil reserves range to 30 billion, comparable to those of the North Sea." And he proceeds to replicate the estimates of Maresca. The Heritage Foundation, which is, by the way, not just an arena for the Central Intelligence Agency and the Mossad, completed this study by Ariel Cohn on July 24, 1997, U.S. policy in Central Asia, creating the new Silk Road. He proceeds to table estimates of the recoverable oil and gas resources and to provide a timetable for their seizure. All of these think tank reports of the ruling class, from Amoco and British Petroleum, from Chevron to Atlantic Richfield, to the American companies that are being assimilated to the plan of dividing it up, are testifying, are preparing the groundwork for seizure, for direct military seizure of these resources. How to accomplish this without a major pretext?
Ralph, that's why the Wall Street Journal article of September 5th is so significant.
Of this year.
Of this year, just a few days ago. Because once the Soviet Union was broken up, and now the process is to control Afghanistan, to make it secure in order to have the pipeline built that will get the oil more easily to the market, the investment is taking place. And the oil fields are being exploited, not just the Tengiz oil field where Chevron Texaco has been pumping oil, that's a Kazakh field, but now this new field, the Kashagan field, the largest discovery in four decades. The problem and the reason for the war, the assault against Afghanistan, the breakup of the Soviet Union to control the Central Asian oil, and now to be able to secure a pipeline, is because it is very difficult to get the oil from Kazakhstan out to market. They either have to build a pipeline under the Caspian Sea, which they haven't been able to do, Or what they're going to do now is to build a port and then tanker the oil to Baku in Azerbaijan and then have another pipeline to Ceyhan in Turkey. Not as efficient as it would be going through Afghanistan. And this is where Afghanistan comes up again. It's very clear Afghanistan is a small piece of a war, top U.S. brass say. It was a headline. And the rest of it was, Afghanistan is only a small piece of the U.S. campaign that could last more than a lifetime. It was Air Force General Richard Myers, who is chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, who said on ABC this week, in October of 2001, that, quote, he had started to prepare targets in Iraq. This is a global war on terrorism, Richard Myers said, and weapons of mass destruction. Afghanistan is only one small piece. Of course, we're thinking very broadly. Since World War II, we haven't thought this broadly about a campaign. Afghanistan, Iraq, played out for the world domination of...
You've been listening to 9/11 and the Capitalist State, the first CD in our two-CD package for this WBAI fund drive, 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11. For your generous contribution of $100 to WBAI, 212-209-2950. I'd like to remind you this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. You're listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We really want to say thank you to Barbara Nimri Aziz. Normally at this time, every Tuesday, you would be listening to Tahrir with Barbara Nimri Aziz, very important show, and we thank her for allowing us the opportunity to be with you tonight. WBAI, as you all know, is critical, essential for each and every one of us, for news, information, for culture. It is our voice, a way for us to get analysis, up-to-date documentation, public affairs, and the latest in culture. 212-209-2950. We thought that 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11 were appropriate at this moment, since the 9/11 Commission report came out and also the Democratic Party is having its convention. As you know, over the last few weeks, Ralph and I had prepared two programs, One Big Property Party, an analysis, a debunking of the myths about John Kerry and John Edwards and the Democratic Party. Ralph?
You know, Maya, it's interesting because I just got back from Boston, where I was involved with the International Longshore Workers Union and the United Steelworkers Union, and in particular the Boston School Bus Drivers Union, which is a part of the United Steelworkers, because the ILWU, which issued a call for the Million Worker March on Washington next October 17th, and the steelworkers were joining together in mobilizing this great march in the Democratic National Convention, of which the organizers of the International Action Center, Larry Holmes and his colleagues, were the central players, I should specify. But I mention this in particular because we led a major march on the DNC in order to articulate the fact that the Kerry administration-to-be, the Democratic Party program, and the advocacy of Kerry himself reflect nothing so much as the designs of the ruling class to perpetuate this war. And I mentioned earlier tonight that the Democratic Party is outflanking the Republicans from the right. It's interesting that in today's Washington Post, the headline is, SEIU chief says the Democrats lack fresh ideas. Quote, breaking sharply with the enforced harmony of the Democratic National Convention, the president of the largest AFL-CIO union stated Monday that organized labor will be better off in the long run if Senator John F. Kerry loses the election. Andrew L. Stern, the head of the 1.6 million member Service Employees International Union, SEIU, said in an interview with the Washington Post that the Democratic Party and its longtime ally, the labor movement, is in deep crisis, devoid of new ideas, working with archaic structures. And that's a rather extraordinary thing for a union head of that size to take this step at this moment, and it's a reflection of the fact that we have mobilized the rank and file, a mass movement, a mobilizing of the left out, the unorganized, the poor, the hungry, the vast constituency in the United States that wants an end to this war of predation in the Middle East. 90% of the people who say they will vote for the Democratic Party want an end to the war in Iraq. CBS News reports that 62% of the public at large considers that the war should never have been waged and that it should end now. 62%, according to the latest CBS poll.
Ralph, I think someone, one of our WBII listeners, should, as a contribution, get 9/11 and the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11 and send it to Andy Stern. Because in these two CDs, we lay out the basis for these wars of predation. And when you hear Bill Clinton last night, and you hear Hillary Clinton, and you hear John Kerry speak about ending U.S. The necessity of U.S. dependence on foreign oil, what we see played out in the world, as articulated by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Carter's, President Carter, Democratic President's national security advisor, we have the control over the world resources of oil. And this is articulated in 9/11 and the capitalist state. 212-209-2950. Over and again, we're going to give this number. Please call. We cannot see the phones because we're broadcasting to you today from California, from our home in Vallejo. And we depend upon you, our Taking AIM listeners, to endorse our efforts and to keep WBAI on the air and keep us in your homes with our analysis and our presentation. 212-209-2950. $100 contribution and much more is appreciated, too, for 9/11 and the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11. We're going to play excerpts from these two CDs today. Ralph?
You know, it's interesting again here, and we appeal to our listeners to consider the facts. The problem we have, brothers and sisters, is there's one big property party with two names, that it is run by the same people. The Wall Street Journal discloses that Wall Street has mobilized to fund the Kerry campaign, equal in amount to that which they are contributing to Bush. In fact, Citigroup, one of the largest banks in the United States, has its fundraising for this present election under the control of its two top officers. The vice president of Citigroup is in charge of raising money for Kerry. The president of Citigroup is in charge of raising money for Bush. I think it makes clear to us, brothers and sisters, that if we don't mobilize in our own name, if we don't answer the call of the National Education Association and its national convention of 12,000 delegates representing 2.7 million workers who endorsed a million worker march, if we do not indeed pick up this challenge, we hand ourselves over to those who would perpetuate the very policies that spell out new 9/11s, repression at home, and further adventure overseas. We ask everybody to contribute to Free Speech Radio, to WBAI, to Taking AIM, so that the information that we are presenting can continue to be brought to you, so that we can translate our understanding of the workings of capital to maintain a struggle and to contribute towards the building of a movement, because every gain we have ever made, whether it's the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement, or the formation of the trade union movement itself, has come about through our mobilizing in our own name. As Martin Luther King once said, African Americans did not get the vote in this country by voting. The black population got the vote by mobilizing, by struggle, by calling out for people to take to the streets, by astounding the ruling class by demonstrating that our people are ready to struggle. Only then are concessions rested, and the minute we demobilize, they take those concessions back. Contribute to Free Speech Radio, so the struggle can continue, so the information can be presented, so we may arm ourselves politically for the inexorable struggles that are coming before us.
212-209-2950, 9/11 and the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11, a two-CD package, $100 contribution, and you are not limited to to a $100 contribution. Larger contributions, if you can afford it, are appreciated and essential to keep your station, WBAI, on the air. Also, matching matching contributions are welcome, because if you provide a match, I think we'll need it. We will make our best efforts to meet it during Taking Aim. 212-209-2950, 9/11 in the capital state, and the smoking guns of 9/11.
Maya, when you were citing before in the segment that we played for our listeners from the 9/11 in the capitalist state, the testimony of John J. Maresca of Unocal, where they were calculating the short-term profit of the pipeline envisaged of $4 to $5 trillion, we can begin to understand the stakes for these tiny oligarchy. It's not, however, an oligarchy confined to the Bushmen. Consider the following, brothers and sisters. John Kerry's chief foreign policy advisors are Richard Morningstar, Rand Beers, and William Perry. Morningstar was the point person for the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan oil pipeline, with the precise consortium of oil giants whose political backers and beneficiaries include Dick Cheney, James Baker, and Condoleezza Rice.
Ralph, that's the oil line that I mentioned was the alternative to building the pipeline through Afghanistan.
Yes, and they have a stake in both. Consider the following. Cameron Kerry, who is the brother and the chief advisor to the Kerry campaign, disclosed last week during a visit to Ariel Sharon in Jerusalem that Kerry considers Bush insufficiently supportive of Israel's policies, including its plans for preemptive strikes against Iran and Syria, and that Kerry will appoint, and I'm quoting, James Baker as his special envoy to the Middle East. How about the chief national security advisor to Kerry, Rand Beers? Who is he? He took over from Oliver North in the Reagan administration. He served in the National Security Council for George H.W. Bush, for Bill Clinton, and for the current Bush administration, he was appointed Special Assistant to President George W. Bush, Senior Director from Combating Terrorism, and was in charge of color coding to determine the level of terrorist threats in the United States. And for Clinton, Beers ran the counterterrorism program in Colombia that encompassed the right-wing death squads that were targeting the peasants who support the guerrilla insurgency in Colombia, and he coordinated the assaults upon the poorest of the farmers in Colombia, destroying their crops, radiating their crops, and this person is now the Secretary of State-to-be of John Kerry. Yes, 9/11 in the capitalist state is the exposure of the one big property party with two names, no less than it is, of the false flag operations to prepare our people and to terrorize our people into a numbed acquiescence into wars of predation, wars for resources, wars for oil, wars for profit, wars that target the most victimized peoples of the planet for their cheap labor and their resources, and use our own working class as cannon fodder in the enterprise.
212-209-2950 for your contribution of $100 to WBAI, 9/11 in the capital state, and the smoking guns of 9/11, a 2-CD high fidelity set. Also, other contributions, membership for low-income seniors and the unemployed and students are available. But at this moment, we would like you to consider, most of all, to a contribution of $100 for the premium, our gift to you, 9/11 in the capitalist state, and the smoking guns of 9/11. We know you're going to want to share it. As you heard already in the portion, it is jam-packed, full of information, and information that you're going to want to remember, that you're going to want to share, and most of all, the analysis that gives you a way to understand all the particulars. 9/11 in the capitalist state, smoking guns of 9/11, for your generous contribution of $100 to WBAI or more if you can afford it, 212-209-2950. We're going to go to another section of the CD and then we'll return. Mark?
Okay, we're good to go. Here we are.
depth of resources. Ralph?
Maya, in the immediate aftermath of the Gulf War, we published a book called Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. In that book, we documented how, quote, since 1964, every United States administration is prepared for direct seizure of Arab oil out of the conviction that the country-selling regimes cannot last, that mass pressure will inevitably transform social relations, thus jeopardizing the flow of capital. Robert Tucker, reflecting these concerns in U.S. business circles, addressed the technical feasibility of seizing Arab oil fields by direct military intervention. Quote, oil, the issue of American intervention. It was a think tank piece that had been prepared for the Pentagon. It was published in commentary in January 1975. Quote, without intervention, there is the distinct possibility of an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to the disaster of the 1930s. And he describes this area that has to be seized as, quote, the Arab shoreline of the Gulf, a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. And indeed, Harper's Magazine then published an analysis called Seizing Arab Oil by Mal Zygmuntas, identified as a Pentagon consultant with, quote, intimate links to high-level U.S. policymakers. What was set forth in 1975 was the blueprint for Operation Desert Shield. And the National Security Council compiled a detailed review of a top-secret Department of Defense plan to invade Saudi Arabian oil fields to displace the Saudi monarchy. The plan, codenamed Dahran Option 4, was drawn up by the Pentagon, providing for a U.S. attacks on the oil fields of the Ghawar, containing, quote, 40% of the world's known oil reserves. It's detailed. It will be led by nine airborne infantry battalions based in North Carolina, flown under escort to Dahran in the Gulf by way of the Israeli air base at Hatzarim. And indeed, in August 1975, Saudi oil fields and Arab oil fields as military objectives, the feasibility study, prepared jointly by Colonel John Collins, the senior specialist in national defense, with 18 years in contingency planning for the Pentagon, and by Clyde Mark, analyst for the House Committee on International Relations. These are long-standing invasion plans, as I state, all in preparation since 1964. By August 25, 1977, President Carter issued a secret presidential directive, PD-18, calling for the preparation of a strike force of several divisions for rapid intervention in the Middle East and in the oil-producing areas of the Gulf. Indeed, the preparations that had been made by every American administration since 64, Democratic and Republican alike, were simply waiting for the moment of opportunity to implement this military plan with all of the elements and the forces involved, mobilized, training, and at the point of go. By 1979, Lawrence Moshe formulated the plan, quote, circulating in Washington corridors. What military people call the U.S. 100,000-man quick strike force, consisting of multiple divisions deployable in air, will begin. But what we need is a real boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we can sell our strike force. It may turn out that that boogeyman may not be defined the same in Arabic as in English, unquote. This was subsequently published in Middle East International on January 19th, 1979, brothers and sisters. The blueprint, the preparation, the contingency plans, all in place, every administration. This is the capitalist state defining its own crisis by its need, its dependence, first of all, on military production to sustain a capitalist economy in rapid decline because of the falling rate of profit. No longer can they even afford the compradors, the feudal elites, the pass-throughs, the vehicles for flight capital on which capitalism has always depended. They want to eliminate their cut. They're going to seize direct control. The preparations are all there. And 9/11 is but the little continuation of the normal operations of the capitalist state in a period of advanced and degenerative decline. The crisis of the permanent war of World War IV is the crisis of imperialism. 9/11, the false flag operations, are the expression of that crisis.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, 9/11 and the Capitalist State. This is WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial and in New York and on the internet, www.wbai.org. I'd also like to mention our programs are archived at our website, www.takingaim.info. The other day, on Sunday, President Bush went before the people of the United States, and it was telecast throughout the world, stating, quote, "Nearly 2 years ago, following deadly attacks on our country, we began a systematic campaign against terrorism." Terrorism. A war on terrorism. When, in fact, the true terrorists are the capitalist state, is the capitalist state itself and the administrations that serve it. Historic conferences organized by none other than Benjamin Netanyahu, who was later to become the Prime Minister of Israel, created the ideological foundation for permanent war and this category of terror that is used by President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice and Secretary of State Colin Powell and all the people who serve them. It creates the ideological foundation for the assault against Afghanistan, the assault against Iraq, for permanent war, the huge military budgets, the cutbacks of the social services here in the United States. Among those in attendance at the second international gathering, the first having taken place in Tel Aviv, the second international gathering, June 24, 1984, nearly 20 years ago, in Washington, D.C., was U.S. Secretary of State George Shultz, then Secretary of State, Congressman Jack Kemp, Senators Alan Cranston, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, then FBI Director William Webster, former U.N. Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick, Israeli officials Moshe Arendt, who had served as the Minister of Defense and Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Yitzhak Rabin, who was then Minister of Defense and had been Israel's Prime Minister and Ambassador to the United States, as well George Bush, and prominent journalists who went on and to this day promote the agenda of a war against terror. Specifically, Ted Koppel of ABC TV, Bob Woodward of The Washington Post, and also Charles Krauthammer of The Washington Post, Daniel Shore of CBS TV and CNN, and Norman Podhoretz, the editor of Commentary, as well as George Will and Arno de Borsgrave of The Washington Times.
Maya, the category of terror was the ideological replacement for the war against communism, for indeed the challenge to revolution and to what was called communist subversion. The entire rationale for the dependence of capitalism on a permanent military economy was served by the struggle against revolutionary transformation in the world, the struggle against resistance to a colonial design, the struggle against national independence movements, the struggle against those who sought to gain control of their own resources, the struggle of the oppressed in this century. Actually, in fact, the pursuit of this agenda has been really a little continuation of the crisis of capitalism since the 1930s. For at the time of the Great Depression, the percentages of those who were unemployed were vast, and the percentages of those employed in arms production in the military were minuscule. The crisis of capitalism was most expressed during the second term of Franklin Roosevelt, when the unemployed had exceeded even the and the laundering of funds through banks, the securing of huge trillions of dollars in offshore accounts, all of this flowing of the from the dependence of the capitalist state on military outlook and military dependence and production This articulated most clearly in a document prepared by the Mossad in the late 1970s, and it was called a strategy for Israel in the 1980s. It was a blueprint for imperialism itself. It claimed that it was necessary now to fragment each Middle Eastern country in its term, and it was very specific in laying out which would come first. Iraq was targeted, Egypt was targeted, Saudi Arabia was targeted. These would be broken down into the original ethnic and religious components in order for their resources to be seized directly and for their governments to be displaced on a permanent basis. This is indeed the agenda that informed the category of terror as the replacement and the ideological integument for the sustaining of the military production that the collapse of the Soviet Union put into doubt. Netanyahu did not function alone in his capacity as the organizer of conferences to engage U.S. imperialism in a permanent war on terror. Indeed, the Israeli publication Ha'ir documented that Benjamin Netanyahu was a high-level central intelligence operative with four different social security numbers operating in the United States under the name of John J. Sullivan and John J. Sullivan Jr., as set forth in both the Jerusalem Post and in Ha'ir, July 4, 1996, a detailed delineation of the function of Netanyahu on behalf of Central Intelligence in preparing the conferences and in orienting U.S. imperialism towards a permanent war on terror. In relation to 9/11, which is what we are going to be focusing on in the remainder of this program, there was a seminal article on the front page of the New York Times, the Sunday edition of the New York Times, which referred to the role of the neocons, and in particular of Paul Wolfowitz, called the Sunshine Warrior, September 22, 2002, in which at a meeting of the General Staff of the United States Army, presided over by the Chief of Staff of the Army, General Eric K. Shinseki. Shinseki stated that all of the preparations for the intervention had been made in the 1970s, and indeed the people associated with the American Enterprise Institute, with the Project for the New American Century, the people associated with the Likud in Israel, the Wolfowitzes, the Pearls, the Libbys, were in preparation for this since 1977. The Sunshine Warrior is a setting forth, an explicit acknowledgement of the preparations for a war on terror on along the lines of the seizure of resources as Wolfowitz and the Likudniks, and the integration of the Mossad and the Israeli strategy for American imperialism became the paradigm for the pursuit of the imperial agenda on a global scale.
Ralph, I think we should look at how these so-called terror networks are set up. And one person who is a master at this is Rafi Eitan. Rafi Eitan, who in of the Israeli intelligence service, who has served for over 25 years. And according to Richard Sale, the UPI intelligence correspondent, writing in July of this year, he said that Rafi Eitan is resurfacing in the United States, that in fact Rafi Eitan has been taken out of retirement, if he had ever been placed there, by Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. Eitan had been the director of the Office of Special Tasks called LACEM, and it's a group in the Israeli Defense Ministry. And incidentally, he was the man who recruited Jonathan Pollard in the spy network, where Pollard transferred 850,000 secret documents to the Israelis. Eitan also orchestrated the Achille Lauro affair that was attributed to the Ahmed Jibril sector of the...
Well, these are false flag operations, and they are a paradigm of the way in which imperialism operates, and we will relate this, of course, to 9/11 in particular. But the false flag operation, as you described it, Maya, and as was exposed by Ben Menashe, involved the carrying out of terror acts in the name of people you want to target. But in fact, the Achille Lauro operation, in which a pleasure boat was seized and its passengers held hostage, and an elderly Israeli man in a wheelchair, Leon Klinghoffer, thrown overboard, was a black operation orchestrated by Rafi Eitan, as documented by Ben Menashe in his book. It was the one of a series of such operations, further delineated by Victor Ostrovsky in his book, The Other Side of Deception. A Rogue Agent Exposes the Mossad's Secret Agenda is the name of this book. And in this book, as we documented in our previous shows, it is established that Rafi Eitan and the Mossad were involved in the blowing up of the Berlin discotheque. They were involved in the planned operations against U.S. embassies in Kenya and in Tanzania, and indeed these were imputed to terrorist others and to Libya in the example of the Berlin discotheque bombing, La Belle Discotheque. The Operation Trojan that Ostrovsky delineates and that we set forth in our broadcast last week involved the planting of equipment in Tripoli, which then sent signals to embassies, presumably planning for assassinations and for terror operations, which were indeed Mossad operations themselves. These then exposed subsequently not only by Ostrovsky, but by German public television and by the German publication Frontal. This is the modality of the gangster state, the integration of the Israeli instrument of imperial policy in the region and imperialism's operations themselves. From the Achille Lauro to the Berlin discotheque in 1986, Rafi Eitan, as was disclosed again by Ostrovsky, made arrangements to blow up an El Al plane and to attribute this operation to Syria. The penetration of Hezbollah by Rafi Eitan and the Mossad, so that particular terror acts imputed to the Hezbollah and to the Syrians and the Iranians were, in fact, false flag operations. This is the method through which the ruling class whips people into hysteria over the false category of terror. 9/11 is a very specific manifestation of that same modality.
Print.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the internet at www.wbai.org. Now, this is the WBAI Fund Drive for those of you who are now tuning in and would normally be hearing Asia Pacific Forum. We want to thank the producers of Asia Pacific Forum for donating this time to us for us to be with you prior to the Democratic National Convention coverage and analysis by WBAI. This special coverage that WBAI makes a great effort to bring to you. And all this costs money, and I can hear the phones are starting to ring. You know, we've been playing long excerpts of 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11, our special premium to you. These programs were produced in 2003. They are as timely today as they were then. They have become historic documents, and that's why we selected these two programs to offer as our WBAI premium for this special fund drive. 212-209-2950 for your generous contribution of $100. And those of you who, like Bill Clinton, are in the upper 1% and are WBAI listeners, or if you're in the upper 2 or 3 or even upper 10%, and can afford more, please do so. WBAI is your window on the world, your avenue, your opportunity to get news, analysis, and culture that you're just not going to get anywhere else. It is a listener-sponsored station. We depend on you. 212-209-2950. 9/11 in the capital state and the smoking guns of 9/11. Ralph.
Brothers and sisters, where else do you think you're going to hear, I ask you, that John Kerry plans to appoint James Baker as his special envoy to the Middle East? Where else will you learn that the third member of the national security triumvirate of the prospective John Kerry administration after Richard Morningstar and Rand Beers is William Perry, the paid consultant to Martin Marietta, who facilitated the merger with Lockheed, whose component parts include Laurel Defense and General Dynamics, the same William Perry, who is a board member of the Carlyle Group, the $14 billion defense and pharmaceutical conglomerate, whose directors are who's who of the Republican establishment, from George Bush Sr., Frank Carlucci, to James Baker. So I tell you, frankly, that this information about the structure of the class, the real significance of 9/11, the real relationship between 9/11 and the capitalist state, the purpose of the two political parties, which are one political party, really one big property party with two names, this understanding, this information, you're not going to find this in the bourgeois press. You're not going to obtain it in the Daily Scaly. Indeed, it is only through speech, free speech radio, through WBAI, and in fact, frankly, I think it's fair to say, predominantly from Taking Aim, that this intensive analysis and fact-laden information, sources cited, will be yours, be available to you. And we are appealing to you to maintain this programming, to sustain this information, to keep this struggle for truth spoken to power alive and well. Particularly as we mobilize because in the beginning was the deed. This is not information for information's sake. Maya, I think we ask for this support not only because free speech radio is so vital, but because this is the way we build a movement, this is the way we mobilize our constituency, this is the way we provide the fight back that we are dependent upon, yes, to survive, because the 9/11 in the capitalist state to which you are listening, brothers and sisters, is a blueprint for the next attack. The commission report is a promise of the next attack. We are being terrorized with the prospect of another attack and with repressive forms of martial law rule. The fight back is our response. The mobilization of our working population at the point of production is the way forward, brothers and sisters. Keep this programming alive.
And despite your wanting to hear Ralph's dynamic presentation right now, which is supposed to be a pitch, we want you to go to the phone. Those of you, and in this day and age, so many of us have portable phones. Bring it along with you to the radio and call 212-209-2950. It may be summertime, and you may be feeling a little slow and easy during the hot weather, but believe us, WBAI still has to pay the electric bill for the tower for transmission, still has to pay rent on the Wall Street office, still has to pay for repairs of computers, and still must maintain the important engineering and operations staff devoted to bringing you WBAI 24/7. 212-209-2950, and we are offering our gift to you. Your generous contribution of $100 is 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11. Each week we bring to you different programming, programming that is on the cutting edge. And during the war, the assault on Iraq, before the assault on Iraq, in August of 2002, we were broadcasting Pea Soup of Deception and what a block-to-block, house-to-house war would be like. The blank check, the proposal to break up Iraq, seize the oil, and preventative strike and permanent war Why War was one of our WBAI premiums, and World War IV, as articulated by former CIA Director James Woolsey, who, by the way, is speaking at the Commonwealth Club here in San Francisco as we speak and is touring the country.
James Woolsey, who was CIA Director for Bill Clinton. James Woolsey, who is now in alliance with the Bush people and the neocons in a call for permanent war, World War IV, a war that he says will be fought for the next 40 and perhaps 50 years. That, indeed, is the agenda to which both parties are subscribers.
So to understand the dynamic and the relationship of this state, the relationship of the category of terror to the events of 9/11, to have an understanding of why these things happen and who are the parties, 212-209-2950, your contribution for 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11. 212-209-2950. This is your opportunity, is your only opportunity. This is the moment when Taking Aim will have be with you for this WBAI fund drive, now and only now. 212-209-2950. 9/11 in the capitalist state, the smoking guns of 9/11. It's amazing, you know, we produce this show, I've listened to it many times, and hearing it tonight on the air, it's remarkable even to me how much information and analysis we can pack into a short program.
Yes, Maya, well, look, it's because we are servicing a movement, because we are part of a struggle, because Free Speech Radio is an integral vanguard part of mobilizing our constituency, because information is precious, because analysis is indispensable, because the understanding that allows us to act is the predicate for effective mobilizing and movements and struggle. An open letter to the anti-war movement was addressed just recently to the components of the anti-war movement that are mobilizing at the Democratic National Convention and indeed at the Republican National Convention. It was an open letter that was signed by Clarence Thomas of the ILWU, who is co-chair of the Million Worker March, by myself in my capacity as communications chair of the Million Worker March, by Larry Holmes, who is national coordinator of the International Action Center and on the steering committee of ANSWER, by Sharon Black, who is the regional coordinator of the Million Worker March and of the International Action Center, by Trent Willis, who is secretary-treasurer of ILWU Local 10 and a co-chair of the Million Worker March, and by Brenda Stokely, who is president of District Council 1707 in New York for AFSCME, and indeed a regional coordinator of the Million Worker March. An open letter to the anti-war movement. Come together, brothers and sisters. Make the mass mobilizations at the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention the feeder marches for the great mobilization together, converging labor in the anti-war, October 17th in Washington, D.C. Support Free Speech Radio so we can continue to provide you with the information, the analysis, and the daily, indeed weekly reports of the progress of the Million Worker March.
And it's also through the Pacifica stations, WBAI in particular, that you get, that you can participate in the marches even when you're not there. All the anti-war mobilizations, WBAI has been there, just as it was during the Vietnam War and during other mass mobilizations. From time to time, the large million-person anti-nuclear demonstration in Central Park in 1982 was one of those. 212-209-2950. Historically, WBAI is there. And WBAI can only be there in the present and in the future with your generous contribution. 212-209-2950. Make it happen. $100 contribution, 9/11 in the capitalist state, and the smoking guns of 9/11 will be yours to share with your family, your friends, and your colleagues. Ralph, one more note, and then let's go back to the CDs. We're playing these sections. You can still get to your telephone while we're playing the parts of the CDs. We want you to have an understanding of why you must have these in your own possession. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Well, may I want to say to our listeners, as I appeal to them to support this radio station, that we issued an appeal on behalf of trade unions, on behalf of working people, on behalf of the anti-war. And we consider that the support of free speech radio, of Taking Aim, and indeed of WBAI, is a way in which to build the movement of resistance and the fight back. So for all of you who are concerned about an answer to the prospect of permanent war, about the danger of repression and indeed of martial law, about the agenda of those who rule us to continue their assault, their class war upon the most vulnerable of our people, please support the information, the analysis, the free speech that allows us to mobilize people and to build a movement of fight back and resistance. Please support Taking Aim. Please support WBAI. Please call in your contribution for 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11.
Well, Mark, let's go back and play a little more. And during this this segment, we still hope you will be making calls. We expect you to be making calls. 212-209-2950. Our Taking Aim listenership are crucial to the dynamics and the effectiveness of WBAI. 212-209-2950. Mark?
We have some folks who found it in their hearts to make donations to the station. And I will read a few of them, and we can thank them on air. Okay, we will thank May Dudley in Pennsylvania for her donation. And we have quite a few people who've made donations, but we do have to listen to the rest of this CD. So shall we thank our listeners or continue with the CD? It's your call.
I took 3 ibuprofen when I for my banged up hip and elbow.
So
fell on my ass on the concrete.
Hello, we're on air right now. Hello, well, here we go. We're going back to the CD.
Ralph, in referring to the Israelis and the method of setting up terror operations, the false flag operations, which also is the modus operandi of the CIA, and often the CIA working in conjunction with the Israeli intelligence operations, the Mossad in particular. J. Michael Waller and Paul Rodriguez, on May 5th, 2000, as early as that, wrote an article on Israeli bugging of the White House in their magazine Insight. And in it, they specify Amdocs. Amdocs is a major company, unknown to us, but that affects each and every person in the United States. In that Amdocs, this major Israeli company, provides the computer collection, the data collection of telephone calls. As you, when you get your telephone bill, you, particularly for the long distance calls, you will see that the calls are recorded. Who called, who you called. And all this information is compiled by Amdocs. And it turns out that in providing this and in providing the hardware by a company called Comverse, another Israeli company, which provides the hardware, and Amdocs provides software, that these companies were working with not only the White House, but the Department of Justice and the Department of State. And in May of 2000, after a year-long investigation, Michael Waller and Paul Rodriguez concluded that the FBI that had been tracking this operation to spy on high-level U.S. officials had been hacking into what was supposedly secure telephone networks.
That's the tip of the iceberg. It's not just the spy operation through Amdocs and Converse and Promise, which monitors all telephonic communications, including those of the intelligence agencies, but it's the operation of an entire spy network within the United States, indeed with reference, Maya, to the operations of Rafi Haitan. In the most recent disclosures about Rafi Haitan, it is made clear that he is now 15,000 what are called Sayanim, or operatives in the United States, 15,000. 15,000, and that they are preparing a follow-up of 9/11. This is a disclosure that has been set forth in some rather meticulous detail
by Gordon Thomas, who has written extensively about the Mossad and other intelligence operations, and also the description of the Sayanim, which are the helpers, that's the Israeli word for help, was detailed by Victor Ostrovsky in By Way of Deception. As Ostrovsky says, there are thousands of Sayanim around the world. In London alone, there are about 2,000 that are active and another 5,000 on the list. And Gordon Thomas says that now there are 15,000 in the United States. Ostrovsky writes, a car Sayan, for example, runs a rental agency that helps the Mossad rent a car without having to complete the usual documentation. And a doctor Sayan would treat a bullet wound without reporting it to the police. The idea is to have a pool of people available when needed who can provide services but will keep quiet about them out of loyalty to the cause.
Maya, United Press International intelligence correspondent Richard Sale reported, Rafi Eitan, the Israeli spy master who recruited Jonathan Pollard to spy on the United States, has reemerged in American soil, and according to federal law enforcement officials, he is traveling on the United States on an Israeli passport using an alias. In a follow-up to the UPI story on August 7th, Sale wrote, Eitan, described by former Israeli officials as being sidelined in mothballs, as in fact in active operation. And indeed, it is a description of a clandestine trip to the United States to activate 15,000 operatives for preparations for a follow-through on 9/11. Eitan is the former chief of Mossad operations in Europe. He landed at Columbus, Ohio, and moved around the Midwest, involved in the coordination of the Israeli organized crime figures who control, as Sale documents, 70% of the worldwide market in ecstasy. For his part in the Pollard spy scandal, he was promoted to a senior position with the largest state-owned business enterprise in Israel, the Israel Chemicals Company. He received a job based on the recommendation of Ariel Sharon. But the operation in the United States that we are describing here, 15,000 operatives, is an explicit setting forth of plans for new 9/11-like operations in the United States to provide further rationale for the war on terror. And the articles by Richard Sale and the articles in Washington Times and the articles in United Press International not only set forth the past operations, but detail the particularity of what is intended in the future. And this follows rather closely on the exposures in a four-part series by Fox News on Israeli spies in the United States. It goes to the issue of the relationship of the Mossad to the events of 9/11, the exposure of what was called the White Van by ABC News and in the New York Post, and the Urban Moving Company. Millions, as ABC News reported, who saw the horrific images of the World Trade Center, and those who saw them won't forget them. But New Jersey homemakers saw something that morning that prompted investigations into Israelis and their connection to Israeli intelligence. There were men taking video of the World Trade Center in the background. They were, in fact, there for hours prior to it. The plate number on their van was traced to a company called Urban Moving Company. The van was spotted on a service road near Route 3. They were all high-level Israeli intelligence officers. The FBI searched Urban Moving's headquarters for hours, removing boxes of documents and computer hard drives. They were all connected to Israeli intelligence and to military intelligence. Indeed, the white van was the tip of the iceberg, because the Israelis were not just operating in New Jersey in relation to the filming of the World Trade Center. There were traces of explosives in the van, and indeed the dogs that were sniffing the van indicated that the explosives had been in that van and had been removed, but shortly prior to that, the white van was a correlate of another discovery, as reported in the Philadelphia Mercury on the 17th of October, 2001, an article by Michelle Moad. Men described as Middle Eastern were detained by federal immigration authorities after being found with detailed footage of the Sears Tower in Chicago. Plymouth police encountered the men after officers responded to Pizzeria Uno on the 1000 block of West Ridge Pike, and they observed the vehicle's preparations and operations. The registration number of the tractor trailer was to Moving Systems Incorporated, and what was determined there were reparations for the taking out of Sears Tower. Indeed, the Sears Tower video that was found in Pennsylvania replicated the discoveries with respect to the white van and the Irving Moving System, and the INS signed papers that allowed the detention of these Israelis, and the question was posed. The fourth plane that was in Ohio when it turned around and crashed in Pennsylvania appeared to be on a course heading for the Sears Tower before its abrupt turn over Ohio. The particulars about the white van and the Philadelphia Mercury, the detailed delineation of the spy operations of the Mossad, over 200 operatives, 60 of them based in Hollywood, Florida, within houses of Mohammed Atta, with whom they had not only been in contact but had been monitoring over a period of time, sustain the evidence regarding the role of the Israelis and the Mossad in the events of 9/11.
So when the FBI issues an alert on Friday, September 5th, that four al-Qaeda suspects may be engaged in another hijack plot, quote, the alert came a day after the Homeland Security Department issued a warning that al-Qaeda could be targeting commercial aircraft flying over or near the continental United States. And the timing is not coincidental, said one official, referring to the FBI bulletin that had also been released. Not coincidental, of course, because on Sunday, President Bush made his presentation before the people of the United States to give a reason for an $87 billion appropriation to continue his war on terror, which, incidentally, the Democratic members of Congress have said they would also support. Now we can see that the supposed hijackers, the supposed terrorists, and the new list that the FBI and the Homeland Security Department are setting out an advisory about may not be the real perpetrators of these events. They are the fall guys. They are the people who are set up by the intelligence operations. Next week, what we will go into are the smoking guns of 9/11.
When we will detail the military training of Mohammed Atta, the way in which the United States Intelligence Service and German Intelligence Services ran Mohammed Atta and his colleagues in Hamburg, the role of the Mossad in this as well, the particularities of the false flag operation of 9/11, the structure of the capitalist state in pursuit of its murderous agenda.
You've been listening to 9/11 and the Capitalist State, and this is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We're coming to you this Tuesday, July 27th, during the WCAI Fund Drive. 212-209-2950 is the pledge line for WBAI, and your opportunity to have your own copy of 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11 for your generous contribution of $100 to sustain the station. Now, Mark pointed out that some of you might be listening to the Democratic National Convention as it unfolds, and I'd like to remind you that it's possible do multitask and have your radio on as you listen, or to do as Ralph and I did last night and others do, listen on C-SPAN later on and not miss Taking Aim and this opportunity to hear 9/11 in the capitalist state, smoking guns of 9/11, and to participate in maintaining and sustaining your station, WBAI, 212-209-2950. Mark has been gracious enough to offer to read some of the contributors' names for us. Mark?
Yes, and we have volunteers standing by, so call 212-209. Yes, I can. I can hear you very well.
While we're waiting on Mark, brothers and sisters, I urge you again, please call. Call in your contribution. The open letter to the anti-war movement that was presented by the organizers of the Million Worker March and by the International Action Committee states, with every day that passes, the crisis facing the American people deepens. Resistance to a brutal occupation escalates and spreads across Iraq as both major political parties march in lockstep to intensify this war. Because the numbers of troops increase the number of troops, allocate yet further trillions of dollars to permanent war, and devastate social services. The statement, the open letter, stipulates the time has come for all of us to unite. Working people, labor organized and unorganized, anti-war activists, and all advocates of social justice. We appeal, as people of conscience, to all our brothers and sisters from every walk of life, in every group, committee, organization, and movement for social improvement, for the advancement of democratic rights, for basic economic and social advance, for a social order free of addiction to arms, production, and war. Let us put aside our small differences, our organizational concerns, our divergences around matters of minor moment. Remember our common aspirations and forget the rest. If we can do this, we have the opportunity to build a movement unprecedented in the history of our people. If we cannot, nothing lies before us but never-ending war and universal suffering both at home and abroad. Without going further into this letter, which we will cite again in further programming, I urge you, brothers and sisters, sustain this programming. Enable us to continue speaking truth to power, keep WBAI on the air, keep free speech radio going, support Taking Aim, continue to sustain the struggle.
Well, Ralph, I think we have our engineering problem solved. Great Mark has given us the opportunity to hear the contributors and to thank all of you. Mark?
Yes, I'm here. Are you getting my signal?
Yes, we are.
Very good.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to thank our gracious donor in Hillside, New Jersey, who will be getting the package. Doesn't want his name mentioned on there, but thank you. And also our friend in Hummelstown, Pennsylvania, all the way out in Pennsylvania. So our signal is cast far and wide, not only the airwaves, but on the Internet. But pick up the phone at 212-209-2950 and make your pledge. Oh, we'll bring up the phones. And we have phone volunteers. There are about 8 or 9 people in there waiting on this rainy night. And if
you know, Mark,
yes.
It's a good thing you mentioned the Internet, because often we get emails from people in Norway, Denmark, Indonesia,
Iran,
Thailand, Costa Rica,
Cuba, Sweden. We have an audience, as does the station itself, but Taking Aim in particular has an audience internationally through the wonders of the Internet. When you call in the call letters of WBAI, www.wbai.org, if you have Real Player on your computer, you can hear the programming live. And we have a live listening audience across the world, literally.
And across the United States, from Florida or Oregon. So those of you in the United States who are listening across the country, you can, given the long-distance rates today, make your call to New York, 212-209-2950. Don't be an Internet freeloader. Help WBAI maintain this powerful Internet reach that brings you programs such as Taking Aim, 212-209-2950. 850.
We have, yeah, we have two callers on the line, so let's generate a mini tsunami here. We have two calls. I see three calls now. So pick up that phone and give us a call at 212-209-2950.
Eight people in the pledge room. We can keep all eight lines going. Usually during the fund drives, we have the lines going and people stacking up. And we know you can do it. We were gracious, I have to say, of playing to you a good deal of 9/11 in the capitalist state, and we want to play part of the smoking guns of 9/11. But we're not going to start it until we have these phones lit up.
Yeah, please, keep those phone calls coming, brothers and sisters. We face a system in advanced crisis and decay, driven to impose wars for cheap labor and the resources of the most impoverished in the world. Virtually every day we are told that an attack by unknown others will require the cancellations of elections and the suspension of all constitutional protections. These open calls for virtual military rule in America express nothing so much as the desperation of the tiny handful of corporate and banking rulers alarmed by the disaffection of the mass of our people, who are testing the waters to undo the very framework of the first American Revolution, the abrogation of representative government, the destruction of our basic rights, and the very principle of a democratic polity. That is again part of the appeal from the Million Worker March organizers. It's relevant to the call we make today. Support Free Speech Radio. Defy those who plan to take away our liberties. Sustain the programming that provides us with the information and the means to build a resistance to the plans of our rulers. WBAI, Free Speech Radio, taking aim. We depend on you, brothers and sisters. Please call in your contribution. Obtain the programming 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11.
212-209-2950. As I mentioned before, this is your only opportunity to contribute to the WBAF fund drive for Taking Aim. 212-209-2950. We know that so many of you have appreciated the premiums that we've offered through the years, whether it was World Trade Center, Uncensored History, or the Pattern of State Terror, which will be arriving shortly to those of you who pledged last time, or Testing the Waters, Military Rule in America, or the great presentation by Ralph on the Kennedy assassination, who killed Kennedy and why, or the hidden history of Zionism, and on and on. We prepare these special programs as each week we prepare individually something that you're not going to hear anywhere else. 212-209-2950. You make it happen. We couldn't do it without you and your cooperation, your support, your generosity. 212-209-2950. It takes the courage and the courage, actually, of people at WBAI to bring a program such as Taking Aim, radical, revolutionary, cutting edge, speaking truth to power. 212-209-2950. We hear from you that you appreciate us. It is your station, this is your program, and this is your opportunity. Seize the moment.
Let me make a point about this, brothers and sisters, because I want to be candid about it. The kind of programming that is undertaken by Free Speech Radio, by WBAI, is always under attack, is always being threatened, is always being subverted, is always being targeted. It is not a free ride here when people attempt to do this sort of programming and broadcasting. It is not a free ride for those who struggle in this station, who those who have built Free Speech Radio, who those continue to keep WBAI alive. From all sorts of quarters, there are attempts to undermine the opportunity to build this sort of broadcasting and this kind of constituency and this kind of audience. So if you're serious about maintaining cutting-edge and radical programming, a critique that doesn't bend, that doesn't offer hostages to the ruling class, that is prepared to continue to speak the truth about the real nature of the 9/11 events, about the meaning of the so-called war on terror, about the preparations for martial law, about the threats to suspend our democratic processes here, to eliminate Congress, to eliminate the Constitution, to impose martial law, if we are to continue to be able to present this information to you, to do it fearlessly, and to expose what the real agenda is of a desperately decaying and degenerate system of rule. You need to continue to keep this broadcasting going and to support the brothers and sisters who work at WBAI to maintain this station, to maintain this programming, and to hold true to its message, not to yield to those who would undermine the message, who would destabilize the ability to continue its reach, because be sure that those efforts never cease. You cannot be in the cutting edge, the vanguard of struggle in this way and not have reprisals as the consequence. This is a matter for our constituents to take into account, our audience to understand. Keep the station going. Support those who are committed to its radical programming. Free speech radio, taking aim, the struggle against the rulers that will bring us permanent war and repression at home is an ongoing struggle. It needs your support. There are no angels out there who do it for us. We rely on the support of the many, because we are the many and our oppressors are the few. That 1% of the population that owns and controls 90% of the national wealth, once described so well by Robert Townsend, who was the president of Avis and American Express, who wrote the book Up the Organization, when he calculated that no more than 5,000 people control what Robert Townsend called commanding heights of the capitalist economy. 5,000 people. Townsend said they regard this country as their private whorehouse, and they treat each president as their personal towel boy. Now, that's a critique from someone from the inside, but it's a measure of our task that this tiny handful of people have hegemony over our economy, our corporations, our banks, our political processes itself. They fund the two parties. They control the means of communication. They make information a hostage to state propaganda. WBAI is a respite, a beacon in this sea of darkness. Keep this programming going. Support taking aim.
212-209-2950. The 9/11 and the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11, a 2-CD program that we are bringing to you. These programs were produced and broadcast in 2003. They are as up-to-date today as they were then. And this is your opportunity to have copies of these shows to send to people throughout the country who've been hearing and reading about the 9/11 Commission and the obfuscation, the distortion of the events of 9/11. Who've been listening to the Democratic National Convention and the pretense that the Democratic Party is an alternative to the Republican Party and that the Democratic Party has the interests of you, me, and others in this country. In fact, it is one big property party. To hear it and to understand it, that is why we're presenting today 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11. 212-209-2950. We want to present portions of the smoking guns of 9/11 also. Please keep the phones ringing, and as a matter of fact, call your friends, your families, and your colleagues and let them know what they're missing by not tuning in at this moment, and they too will recognize, we hope, that they will contribute to WBAI. Introduce a friend to WBAI each and every day. The outreach for WBAI, the sustainer base, the donor base for WBAI, that is the listener base of WBAI, depends upon each and every one of us to do that outreach. Send an email, make a telephone call, write a postcard. WBAI is on the agenda. 212-209-2950 for your generous contribution of $100 for 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11. Mark, let's go to the CD.
All right, and please continue to call 212-209-2950. Thank you for that call, and now for the CD.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, September 16th, 2003. Unanswered questions to 9/11. William Brunch, writing in the Philadelphia Daily News on September 11th, 2003, states, why don't we have answers to these 9/11 questions? William Bunch, as many others, are wondering and have wondered since September 11th why so many issues are unresolved. But if we look at the statements of Andreas van Bulow, who was the Minister for Research and Technology in the cabinet of former German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt, and for 25 years an SPD member of the German Parliament, heading the Committees on Intelligence
and the security agencies,
we see that really there are the smoking guns of 9/11 that explain, within the context of the work of intelligence agencies, the CIA, the FBI, the Israeli Mossad, the answers to September 11th. Today on Taking Aim, the smoking guns of September 11th, of 9/11, von Bulow states, whoever wants to understand the CIA's methods has to deal with its main tasks, covert operations, by organizing insurrections, terrorist attacks, usually combined with drugs and weapons trade and money laundering. This is essentially very simple. One arms violent people with weapons. Since, however, it must not under any circumstances come out that there is an intelligence agency behind it, von Bulow continues, all traces are erased with tremendous deployment of resources. I have the opinion, and this he confirms, von Bulow states, that the CIA spends 90% of its time this way, creating false leads. And if anyone suspects the collaboration of the agencies, he or she is accused of being a conspiracy madness. The truth often comes out, he says, only years later. And he quotes CIA Chief Alan Dulles, the former CIA chief who was so enamored of covert operations, quote, in case of doubt, I would even lie to Congress. Ralph?
Andreas von Bulow, and in this rather remarkable and explicit and upfront interview in the Tagesspiegel, the German daily newspaper, on January 13th of 2002. Von Bulow, who monitored and studied and actually was involved with German and American intelligence and security agencies, wrote a book on the subject called In the Name of the State. And he makes the point that the 26 intelligence services in the United States have a budget of at least, and that's the open budget, of $30 billion. Yet, von Bulow says they purport to have been unable to prevent attacks that every intelligence agency knew were about to occur. They didn't even have an inkling, they claimed, that this would happen. And for 60 decisive minutes, these military and intelligence agencies allowed their fighter planes to remain on the ground. And 48 hours later, they were presenting a list of suicide attackers when we knew that seven of them were still alive. And where does this list come from? Why is it false? if I were the chief investigator in such a case, I would go public and give information on what these intelligence agencies were really up to. And then von Bülow addresses himself to the question of Mohammed Atta, who had spent so much time in Hamburg under the close direct observation and monitoring of the German intelligence agencies. Quote, "If this Atta was the decisive man in this operation, is it not strange that he took the risk of taking a small commuter plane that would reach Boston but a few minutes before the connecting time? Had this commuter plane been a few minutes late, he would not have been on the plane if he was there at all, that was hijacked. Why should a so-called sophisticated terrorist do this? One, by the way, can read on CNN's website that none of these names were on the official passenger lists. None of them had gone through check-in procedures. Why did none of the threatened pilots give the agreed-upon code 7700? The black boxes, which are fire and shock proof, the voice recordings containing valuable data. What's happened to them? Where are they?" Von Bülow continues, "Like assailants who in their preparations leave tracks behind them like a herd of stampeding elephants, the intelligence agencies have left their mark all over these operations. These so-called hijackers," von Bülow states, "made payments with credit cards with their own names, reported to flight instructors with their own names, left behind rented cars with flight manuals in Arabic for jumbo jets, took with them on their so-called suicide trip wills and farewell letters, which then fall into the hands of the FBI because they are stored in a place where they will be found. Clues are left behind like a child's game of hide-and-seek. This is a transparent operation," says von Bülow. "Is it not interesting as well that the obscure stock transactions which we have tracked in Germany, the amount of transactions in stocks in American Airlines, United Airlines, insurance companies increased 1,200% for a value of $15 billion? Who do you think is involved in that? Who would have the capacity to make those investments? The people who are in the know, the people who control. With the help of these attacks, the Western democracies are subject to brainwashing. The enemy image of anti-communism, which doesn't work, has been replaced, and we have given birth to a new replacement called suicidal terrorism. But this idea of the enemy image doesn't come from me. It's from Zbigniew Brzezinski," he states, "the policymakers of American intelligence who are preparing the way."
And if you want to see the complete von Bülow interview, which Ralph and I suggest you read, it's on the internet at www.serendipity, that's serendipity.li/WOT/von Bülow, which is VonBülow.htm. Referring to Zbigniew Brzezinski, the mastermind of the American strategy for seizing the control over the Central Asian republics.
And their oil and natural gas resources in particular.
Von Bülow states, "It was the strategy of the American security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, to destabilize the Soviet Union from neighboring Muslim countries. They lured the Russians into Afghanistan and then prepared them for a hell on earth, their Vietnam. With decisive support of the U.S. intelligence agencies, at least 30,000 Muslim fighters were trained in Afghanistan and Pakistan. One of them is, and this is important to note, Osama bin Laden." Von Bülow states, "I wrote years ago, it was out of this brood that the Taliban grew up in Afghanistan, who had been brought up in the Quranic schools financed by American and Saudi funds. The Taliban, who are now terrorizing the country and destroying it." Quote, now this is von Bülow speaking. In other words, it is the Taliban funded by the CIA and the Saudis at the behest of the Central American, of the Central Intelligence Agency. To talk about the funding, the U.S. funding and the U.S. creation of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. It is important to look at General Gul Hamid's statements. General Gul Hamid, who was the Director General of the Pakistani Intelligence Services, the ISI. Ralph, did you want to say something?
No, go ahead, Maya, please.
Now, we quoted last week in our program 9/11 and the Capitalist State statements by General Gul Hamid on who he thought was involved, who he thought was behind 9/11, namely elements of the U.S. intelligence, the U.S. Air Force, and the Israeli Mossad. In referring to the creation of Al-Qaeda and why General Gul Hamid states that Osama bin Laden definitely, in his opinion, was not at all involved in the events of 9/11, Gul Hamid states that the Islamic fundamentalists got their big boost in the modern age as CIA assets in the covert campaign I was involved with to force the Soviets out of Afghanistan. Note, he states he was directly involved in this campaign. Bush Sr., he remarks, was vice president during that entire campaign. The ISI, the Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence, coordinated the entire operation in Afghanistan. I know this firsthand, as I was the director general of the ISI at the time. This is General Gul Hamid in an interview with Arno de Borsgrave of the Washington Times and UPI. Ralph?
Well, what is significant about the elaborate descriptions of both Andreas von Bülow and General Gul Hamid is that they speak from direct and on-hand experience and knowledge of these specific false flag operations. They did not go unnoted in the press. The Germans were tracking 7/11 conspirators as early as 1998. The New York Times wrote, under the authorship of Desmond Butler on January 18, 2003, quote, 3 years before the September 11th attacks, Germany's domestic intelligence service tracked completely prominent members of a Hamburg cell that were said to have planned and executed the aircraft hijackings, according to newly obtained documents. These documents include intelligence reports, complete surveillance logs, transcripts of intercepted phone calls, telephone calls that contradict public claims that the German intelligence agencies knew little about the members of the Hamburg cell. The records show, as early as 1998, the Germans monitored all communications, all meetings between the men and any who came to see them. The surveillance would lead a year later to the Hamburg apartment where Mohammed Atta and others were living while attending universities. And the article goes on to determine that Mohammed Atta and his putative associates were under the complete control and surveillance of German intelligence, and with it, the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yes, Ralph, to go back again to the history of the formation of Al-Qaeda. In an article by Patrick Martin, January 22, 2002, that appeared in the Worldwide Socialist website, he remarks that the founding father, that title of Al-Qaeda, goes to Ronald Reagan's CIA director, William Casey, and that it was William Casey specifically who initiated the campaign to recruit the Islamic militants from all over the world to come to Afghanistan, and that the fundamentalists came from dozens of countries, from Morocco to Indonesia, and including the Muslims from the United States, particularly black Muslims, who traveled to Afghanistan under the CIA auspices, the CIA funding, received trainings in weapons and explosives from CIA trainers, and went into combat with U.S.-supplied arms. In fact, Osama bin Laden was a product of this process, going to Afghanistan in the early 1980s. So here we have, again, stating specifically the role of the United States in creating what is now called the Terror Network. And Zbigniew Brzezinski, who we mentioned before, told the French newspaper, quote, which was more important in world history, the Taliban or the fall of the Soviet Empire? And that was in an interview with Vincent Javert in Le Nouvel Observateur, January 15th through 21st, 1998. So here we have the CIA creating and funding and working with other aspects of the U.S. intelligence agencies and the Pentagon in creating what is now called the terror network that is blamed for the events of 9/11.
What's interesting in particular about the terror network as it's described is that von Bülow, having established and the New York Times having confirmed that the activities of Mohammed Atta and these putative terrorists were not just monitored in detail, but every communication that they made and every party that they encountered was noted and recorded and documents filed in the intelligence agencies, in the German intelligence agency and the Central Intelligence Agency. Here are the Washington Post on August 29, 2002. German intelligence states the hijackers picked the Trade Center as a target in 2000. The suspected September 11th suicide pilots stated more than a year before that they would kill thousands in the World Trade Center. Federal prosecutor Kay Nehm described the hijackers' words. Nehm said the Hamburg hijackers began planning the attacks on the United States using aircraft in early October 1999, and she particularizes that the hijacker Marwan al-Shehhi specified the World Trade Center explicitly in conversations with a librarian in April 2000. All of this, by the way, fully in the hands of the German intelligence and the Central Intelligence Agency. And what's particularly interesting about this is that for 4 years while living in Hamburg, Mohammed Atta was part of what is called, it was called a, quote, joint venture between the United States and German governments. In an important article by the investigative reporter Daniel Hopsicker, who has monitored with particular importance, I should say, the activities of the putative hijackers in Venice, Florida, where they were supposedly trained on Piper Cub and Cessna aircraft. He describes how Mohammed Atta was part of a joint venture between the U.S. and German governments, a, quote, an elite international program run by a little-known private organization whose principal figures were David Rockefeller and former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. The joint-funded government effort picked up the tab for all Mohammed Atta's travel from Cairo to Istanbul, from Aleppo in Syria for the years 1994 and 1995, and employed him during 1996 and 1997. His financial relationship with the United States and German government extended back to his initial move from Egypt to Germany in 1992. He had been recruited in Cairo by a mysterious German couple dubbed the hijacker sponsors by an account in the Chicago Tribune. Mohammed Atta enjoyed the patronage of a government initiative known as the Congress Bundestag Program, overseen by the United States State Department and the German Ministry of Economic and Cooperation Development, the equivalent of the U.S. Agency for International Development and Intelligence Front. Mohammed Atta was on the payroll of this intelligence front operation for in the entire period of his stay in Hamburg, and it is documented up to 1 month before the 9/11 attacks. A seven-line report by the German newspaper Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung on October 18, 2001, Atta was the tutor for scholarship holders. And the story quotes spokesman for another organization called the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, described as a German international further education organization, which was in fact funded by intelligence agencies paying Hamburg cadre principal Atta between 1995 and 1997. The U.S. end of this program was run out of an address at United Nations Plaza in New York by CDS International. CDS stands for Karl Duisberg Society, the name of its German counterpart in Cologne, the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, named for Karl Duisberg, a German chemist and industrialist who headed the Bayer Corporation. The list of elite power brokers backing the CDS program ranges from Kissinger and Rockefeller, as mentioned, and included former President Bill Clinton, former First Lady Hillary Clinton, and Clinton White House advisor Ira magazine. There is no question here as to the character of the operations of Mohammed Atta.
And also, there is no question that you're not going to get information such as this with the power and the force and the precision of what you just heard in the 9/11 Commission report, the official 9/11 Commission report. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the Internet, www.wbai.org. I'm Maya Schoen, and I'm with
Rob Schoenman.
And each week, Tuesday, from 5 to 6, we produce Taking Aim. Tonight, this is the WBAI Fun Drive, if you're just tuning in. And we've been here since 7 p.m., and we'll be here another half hour until 9:30, when WBAI will continue its coverage of the Democratic National Convention. Our premium, and what you heard an excerpt of, is 9/11 and the capitalist state, and what you just heard, the smoking guns of 9/11. For your contribution of $100 to Free Speech, WBAI, listener-sponsored WBAI, 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Those of you listening on the Internet, we don't have Internet access for the recent premiums. Please, now is the time. Pick up the phone, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Maya, the 9/11 Commission, which has just published its report, purports to be investigating the circumstances of 9/11. Well, 40 years ago, when I was living in London, working with Bertrand Russell, we set up something called the Who Killed Kennedy Committee to examine the circumstances of the execution of John F. Kennedy. And I mention that because many of you may recall that some 40 years ago, in fact, 40 years this September, the Warren Report was issued. And the Warren Report purported to be an investigation of the circumstances of the Kennedy killing. And what did the Warren Report address? It addressed the question of why it was that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. What motivated this lone nut to kill John F. Kennedy? They took as a premise that the patsy, the person who in fact was a contrivance of the intelligence agencies, was to be assumed as the assassin of Kennedy. And they worked from that premise. And so with the 9/11 Commission, it starts from the premise that there is this vast terror apparatus of which Osama bin Laden is the inspirer and the leader and the spokesperson, that is responsible for every event assailing American and Israeli interests of the past quarter of a century. Condoleezza Rice said that it was not only the Achille Lauro for which Osama bin Laden was responsible, but the blowing up of the coal and the blowing up of the embassy in Nairobi and the 1993 bombing, etc., etc. All of this is orchestrated again by the 9/11 Commission in its official report, the conclusion of which was there's inevitably going to be another such attack of an even greater scale. Well, our programming is designed to puncture that balloon, to expose the falsity of it, because there is not a scintilla of evidence to associate Osama bin Laden with the attacks of 9/11 or the other attacks so mentioned here.
Well, especially the Achille Lauro and others. I don't think Condoleezza Rice has listened to our programs such as Libya and Lockerbie, The Untold Stories, or Outing the Gentleman Killers of the CIA, Parts 1 and 2, among many of the programs we did on these false flag operations.
But more than that, Maya, more than that, and I ask our listeners to call this number to contribute, because 9/11 and the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11 documents how no evidence has been brought to bear to associate Osama bin Laden with the events of 9/11. This was assigned to Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of Britain, who we call Tony Thatcher. He was supposed to produce a white paper of evidence. They never could do it. They produced instead fake tapes. One of the tapes, which claims to have Osama bin Laden accepting responsibility and praising the participants in the hijacking and the blowing up of the, or the crashing of the planes in the World Trade Center, was exposed as a scissors and paste job run by the CIA. You couldn't discern the audibles. And in fact, they took pictures of Osama bin Laden at a wedding ceremony 18 months before, where he was praising the participants in the wedding and congratulating the families of the wedding, the bride and groom. And all of this was married into a tape purporting to be about 9/11. Hani Sibai, the technological expert in London, exposed this. It was on the BBC all over the Arab world. I mention this because you will not get this information outside
and
of
Ralph,
the kind of programming that we do.
It's also time to mention the phone again. The phone number, 212-209-2950. Ralph is getting very excited. And
well,
he hears again the smoking guns of 9/11. You can see what it does to him, and we know it's going to do to you. 212-209-2950. He is correct. This is not a subject to be taken lightly. This is not a coffee table book with pages turned with pretty pictures. This is information that we know you rely upon, that you want to distribute, that you want your friends, your family, your colleagues to share, to know all the details and the dynamics. 212-209-2950. We're in the closing 20 minutes of your opportunity to contribute to WBAI, to have our thank you to you for your contribution. 212-209-2950. And if you're listening and you think your friends are not listening, give them a call at this moment. Ralph.
There is only one actual record of Osama bin Laden on the subject of 9/11. And this is a 9-page, single-spaced interview published in the Pakistani publication Umat and then replicated on the BBC. In this interview, Osama bin Laden states the following. I have stated repeatedly, I am not involved in the 11th of September attacks on the United States. As a Muslim, I try my best to avoid telling lies. I had no knowledge of these attacks, nor do I consider the killing of innocent women, children, and other humans an appreciable act. My Islam forbids strictly causing harm to innocent women, children, and others. Such a practice is forbidden even in the course of battle. All that is going on here is an attempt to blame others for acts that are the responsibility of the authorities in the United States itself. There are intelligence agencies in the U.S. that require billions of dollars of funds from the Congress and government each year. This funding issue was a huge problem after the fall of the Soviet Union. Until the existence of the former Soviet Union, they had no problem obtaining huge funds for their military and their intelligence. So they began this propaganda against Islam, against myself. You see, the Bush administration has sought budgets of billions of dollars. Now they spend this money for their expansion and for increasing their reach into our societies and our countries. The people in the United States Drug Enforcement Department are in fact running the drugs trade just as they did with General Noriega. This is the role of the CIA. Is there existing a government in the world that the United States government does not seek to dominate? Is there not a secret government in the United States who in fact is responsible for these attacks? Osama bin Laden states, I repeat, we are not hostile to the United States. I am not hostile to the people of the United States. We consider the United States government and its system to require making nations slaves, to force them to mortgage their political and economic freedom. Now, this elaborated, careful analysis by Osama bin Laden has never been refuted as in its authenticity, and of course it is not even cited or mentioned in the established press of this country. It is only through Taking Aim, only through WBAI, only through Free Speech Radio, that this kind of information, this basic, elementary understanding of the nature of these events can be brought to bear. Please continue your support for this sort of broadcasting. So this information is in your hands so we can arm ourselves with the essential understanding that precedes political battle, political struggle, and political change in our society.
212-209-2950. Talking about Fakhri Raf, on July 20th, our program Alawi, the new butcher of Baghdad, a fitting symbol of imperial rule, we go into the details of how, actually, Iyad Alawi, the current prime minister of Iraq, put in place by the United States, was responsible for handing over to the British government and the Central Intelligence Agency much of the fake intelligence, which was used as the basis for the British report and the presentation by Secretary of State Colin Powell before the United Nations on behalf of the United States, as the reason, the core reason for the rationale for why the United States and Great Britain were going to launch a murderous and devastating assault on the people of Iraq. 212-209-2950 for 9/11 and the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11. You've only heard a brief excerpt of the smoking guns. Just imagine what is ahead in store for you. Ralph.
I'm glad you brought up the person of Iyad Alawi, celebrated not only by Bush but by Kerry. This prime minister of Iraq was in fact an instrument of the intelligence services of Saddam Hussein for years, at the time when Saddam Hussein was supported by the United States authorities and funded by the Central Intelligence Agency. Alawi, for Saddam Hussein, hunted down dissidents amongst working people and intellectuals and students across Europe and murdered them on behalf of Saddam Hussein. Working for the CIA, he did this. When he broke with Saddam Hussein, still working for the CIA, Iyad Alawi carried out assassinations of those who are now opponents of U.S. policy. And recently Newsweek reported that this same prime minister of Iraq walked into a prison, and this is a report only 2 weeks old. This is Newsweek's report. I will talk about the Sydney Morning Herald in a second. Newsweek's report describes how Iyad Alawi went into a prison, took a hatchet off a wall, and chopped off the hand of a prisoner in the presence of the defense minister and the interior minister. The Sydney Morning Herald story describes how he went, the same prime minister, the CIA instrument in Iraq, celebrated by Kerry and by Bush alike, Iyad Alawi, brothers and sisters, just recently went into a prison, took out a pistol, and shot dead at point-blank range 6 prisoners, gravely wounding a 7th. This is the classic model, the true face of imperialism, a fitting instrument, a fitting symbol of imperial rule in Iraq. And that information and that analysis is, again, what we do, what we center on in Taking Aim. Please support this programming, brothers and sisters.
212-209-2950. Or 9/11 in the capitalist state and the smoking guns of 9/11. Mark, let's play in about another 3-4 minutes of the smoking guns, and we'll close out the show coming back to you and thanking those of you who've been generous contributing to WBAI.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Coming up at 9:30, we'll be covering the Democratic National Convention carried over the Pacifica Network. I'd like to thank Bright Food Shop at 218 8th Avenue at 21st Street for their donation of dinner. Thank you very much. That's Bright Food Shop, 218 8th Avenue at 21st Street. They provided dinner for our phone volunteers. Their phone number is 212-243-4433. And you can still make a pledge, 212-209-2950, and show your support for WBAI, the Pacifica Network, and what we're bringing to you every day. 212-209-2950. You can also pledge online, and that's www.wbai.org. We'll be having a few musical selections before we get the national feed. And I urge you, I not quite plead, but I'm asking you, pick up the phone and give us a call at 212-209-2950. There are several volunteers who came down on this damp, cool, rainy night to show their support. So let's keep them busy, 212-209-2950. And at 9:30, we'll be having the Democratic National Convention. And I thank you for that call. And keep those calls coming in, 212-209-2950.
Maya Schoen again and
Ralph Schoenman
from Taking Aim. We wanted to thank all of you who contributed. There was some interference, probably by somebody at the phone company, with our connection with those of you in New York and through the WBAI facility in New York, those of you throughout the world who listen to Taking Aim. We'll be back next Tuesday at our regular 5 p.m. time. From 5 to 6 on WBAI 99.5 FM and on the internet at www.wbai.org. I want to thank the engineer Mark. I also want to thank Michael Yoshida at KPFA who sets us up on the ISDN connection to WBAI, and Kathy Davis, the public affairs director, who each week ensures that Taking Aim is brought to you. as well each and every one of you who contributed today for 9/11 and the Capitol Estate and the smoking guns of 9/11.
And I want to thank Bernard White, who has been such a stalwart, always there for us, and our brother Don Rojas, who is the manager of WBAI, always in the struggle. We're in this together, brothers and sisters. I would like to give you one more number to consider calling, which is the number of Sister Brenda Stokely, who is president of AFSCME, Joint Council 1707, District Council 1707, and a key coordinator of the Million Worker March in New York. 917-566-4272. I'll be repeating that number in subsequent programming. 917-566-4272. Brenda Stokely and Chris Silvera, who is the chair of the National Teamsters Black Caucus and secretary-treasurer of Teamsters Local 808 in Long Island City, are the key coordinators in New York for the Million Worker March. The Million Worker March is about the message of free speech radio. The Million Worker March is the political expression, the mobilization of people. But support this programming so we can sustain the information that provides an understanding that allows political activism across the board. Support WBAI, support Free Speech Radio, support Taking Aim, brothers and sisters. Thank you for listening to us in this 2.5 hour period. Come back and hear us on Tuesday at 5, but continue to call in your monetary support for the premiums, 9/11 in the capitalist state, and the smoking guns of 9/11. Maya, give the number again.
212-209-2950. Also, we'd like to hear from you personally. You can reach us at takingaim@wbai.org or at takingaim@pacbell, that's P-A-C-B-E-L-L dot net. And you can write to us at P.O. Box 6345 Vallejo, that's V-A-L-L-E-J-O, California 94591. But now, most of all, we would appreciate if you dial 212-209-2950 and make known your support for WBAI and Taking Aim. Our gift to you is 9/11 in the Capitol Estate and the smoking guns of 9/11. You've heard only a small excerpt, a small, powerful excerpt about Muhammad Atta and the falsified information that's being presented about the true Muhammad Atta. And you'll hear so much more on the smoking guns of 9/11. So still continue to keep those phones ringing. 212-209-2950. And for your information, the theme song for Taking Aim is the powerful music of Youssou N'Dour, one of the most renowned Senegalese artists, and who, in opposition to the U.S. assault on Iraq, postponed his tour in the United States and is here at the current moment. 212-209-2950. 9/11 in the Capitol Estate, the smoking guns of 9/11, but most of all, show your support for WBAI. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Will be with you next week. And once again, thanks to our engineer tonight, Mark.
And you're very welcome. And I urge you to continue calling 212-209-2950. Coming up at 9:30 will be the Pacifica National Broadcast of the Democratic National Convention. And to usher in the satellite feed, we'll hear Telstar. So if you're in... Here we go. I'm getting some tone. Stand by.